From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 21st day of June 2022, the first day of summer. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Hear about this week's webinar that the Farm Doc team, along with the Corn Growers and the Soybean Association in the state of Illinois, will be hosting related to conservation practices and the dollars and cents of doing them, even just doing one less tillage pass, in fact. And you can join that on Thursday for free. You'll hear more a bit later in our program about that webinar. It's Thursday at 11 o'clock. And then as we close out our time together, Don Day will be here from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, along with Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing. Don will look at the weather, and Dave will take a look at the agricultural energies on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day at $7.60¾, 23¾ lower. December at $7.50, down 29½¢. The July beans at $16.81, down 21. And November at $15.10½, down 27¢. Bean meal $6.80 lower, and the bean oil down 42¢ for the day. Wheat soft red July down 59¢. $9.75¼ the settlement price there. The hard red at $10.41¼, down 63¾ cents for the afternoon. Live cattle futures in Chicago on the nearby contract finished at $136.25, down 32½¢. The feeder cattle at $175.30, up $2.35 for the day, and lean hogs $1.72½ higher on the afternoon. Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana is here now to discuss a down day in Chicago for this first day of summer. Hi, Wayne. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here and be in air conditioning to talk.
I bet it is. So tell me about this trade that started last night, corn down hard. What happened?
Well, you know, we got, depending on if you looked at the American model, it was a little cooler and the extended temperatures in the U.S. That was number one. You know, we continue to look at a very weak Asian market as far as any sales and what's going there and any additional new products going that way. And let's face it, we've got mounting recession fears out here, and we've got funds that are going to the sidelines and turning their positions to cash. And that's happening in the stock market and in the commodity markets as well. You know, the housing starts are way down. A lot of things are just not looking good for the economy right now.
So usually what that means, and depends on whether it really impacts demand on the backside, but if the funds are going to get out, that is a temporary push in the marketplace one way or the other, and then it recedes back to the fundamentals of supply and demand. Are you worried about either supply and demand at this time? I suppose in this case, demand and whether destruction has taken place, or if demand under the inflationary pressures will just skip out.
Yeah, it's a hard one to figure out there, Todd. And you know, as we look at that and see, we do see, you know, less amounts going to China on some of our shipments that we'd like to. We're seeing less sales than we would like to. And I think Brazil's even seen less sales than what they would really like to see to that. We see a lot of discussion about where the rain is, where the high pressure is going to be, and the American model taking a little leadway here now, too. And we've got a very critical time coming up here just a little later in July than usual because of the lateness in planting. You know, we got up and caught up to where we're supposed to be, but our corn's a couple weeks behind, and I know in a lot of other places it's 2 to 3 weeks behind also. So we could be stretching on in just a little, another week later in July from when the weather could be coming back and turning hotter and drier. And that is a real problem. And will we see rains? And we're seeing the rains up on the Canadian border, which actually they're wet up there.
Yeah. So what are you telling producers? I suspect they had some time to talk to you today. And were they calling in worry?
You know, some of them got other calls, whatever. There was one of the advisors that sold another 10% of his 22 corn today. Just because breaking like that, we broke down between the 20 and 50 and 40 day moving averages here, and that's a signal for a lot of these trading funds to price a little bit more. I think that lot of people are just sort of sitting back and looking at this and not doing a lot here in this moment. Most everybody really wanted to buy, and fortunately we talked most of them out of that this morning because it went lower. But all in all, I think that we could see some stabilization by the end of the week if the forecast changed.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Pleasure as always.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. You can always find us online at WILLAG.org. Have you ever wondered about the dollar and cents bottom line impact of a conservation practice, or maybe just making one less tillage pass across the field? Well, this Thursday, the University of Illinois, along with the Illinois Corn Growers Association and the Illinois Soybean Association, will be hosting a Farm Doc Daily webinar starting at 11 a.m. It's free, and you can register on our website at willag.org, taking a look at 7 years' worth of data on some 400,000 acres across the state of Illinois and what those practices have really meant for profitability and the environment. You can join that webinar this Thursday for free. Registration is online at the Farm Doc Daily website or on our website at willag.org. Gary Schnitke will be there along with Sarah Sellers and a couple of others, including Laura Gentry, who is the Director of Water Quality at the Illinois Corn Growers Association. I talked with her earlier in the day and asked her to tell me what they really expect to present Thursday.
So we are working with Dr. Gary Schnitke and Sarah Sellers, his PhD candidate, and it'll be the director of PCM and myself, so Greg Goodwin and myself, Dr. Gary Schnitke and Sarah Sellers, and we are going to be talking about all the different costs, the financial benefits, and some of the environmental benefits as well of the various different conservation practices. Not just the benefits, but also some of the downsides and the risks of the conservation practices as well. So there's going to be a real even-handed, balanced way to present that information and share it with you. And it's all based on the PCM booklet that came out in the June version of Prairie Farmer.
So this is PCM, or Precision Conservation Management, can be found online as well at precisionconservation.org. I'm wondering if you could give me some stats about the number of acres that are involved and the data that was collected from them over how many years.
This is a 7-year data set, and it is based on around 400,000 acres of Illinois farmland. We are also in Kentucky and Nebraska, but this is just focusing on Illinois farms. It's showing corn and soybean acres, and based on about 400 farmers, well over 10,000 field years.
What kinds of things will you talk about?
What we're going to focus on are the PCM practice standards. So we're looking at different tillage practices, nitrogen management practices, and cover crops. And for each one of those, we'll be looking at both the financial implications of reducing tillage, moving to more in-season nitrogen management, growing cover crops, also the environmental implications, so the benefits to water quality, to soil health, and to climate change, greenhouse gas emissions.
Who's your target audience, do you suppose?
This webinar is really meant first and foremost for our farmers in Illinois and across the Midwest who are interested in conservation practices, who have been thinking about adopting a new practice but are a little on the fence, not understanding all the financial implications for their farm business. But it's also something I think would be of great interest to some of the state agencies in Illinois. We hope that some legislators will join us on the call and listen in. So, wide audience.
You and Gary and the rest of the crew have been looking at these numbers for some time. Are there some takeaways that you think you'll present and that people should know about as it's related to PCM and the data that's been collected?
Sure, yeah. So the 7 years of data that are represented in our PCM data set that is made available by the farmers that are part of PCM is got a number of good takeaways. But I think the one that a lot of our farmers are going to be the most interested in is the nitrogen data. It is telling. It's pretty interesting. And there are some very clear implications and takeaway messages for the farmers about how they can address nitrogen management in the future that is both cost effective and great for the environment.
What are they?
The primary ones is that a lot of our farmers are applying more nitrogen than they need to. They're applying above the MR10, and we are seeing year in and year out, every year of the program, that the MR10 recommended range is the most profitable nitrogen application rate range in our program, and yet 70%, about 70% of our farmers are applying over the MRTN. So you're going to see that the 25% most profitable fields for corn in the PCM data set every year, they are, the majority of them are applying within the MRTN range. Also, many of them, about 70%, are applying their nitrogen in season. So there's some really interesting nitrogen takeaways there. I hope people will join in and look at those numbers.
MRTN, for those who want a preview of what the nitrogen rate for their area might be, can always find that for a good portion of the Corn Belt on the nitrogen rate calculator. Just look up N-Rate Calculator. This is hosted at Iowa State University, and it's the Corn Nitrogen Rate Calculator, so you can find it quickly and simply and easily. Laura, thank you so much, and I wish you the best of luck on this Thursday event.
Thank you, Todd.
Laura Gentry is the Director of Water Quality Research for the Illinois Corn Growers Association, and will join Gary Schnicki, agricultural economist, to present some findings from the PCM Precision Conservation Management Study that has been taking place over the last 7 years, collecting some 10,000 field crop years worth of data on conservation practices, the impact they have on profitability and on the environment. You can sign up for this Thursday's webinar for free if you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org, or look for the webinar on the Farm Doc Daily website. You're looking for the webinar entitled Financial and Environmental Impact of Conservation Practices, and it will include at the top of the page the Precision Conservation Management logo. On this Tuesday, the first trading day of this week, let's check in with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, to see what the forecast holds for the Corn Belt and the rest of the nation. Hi, Don. Thanks for being with us. Start in the place that you think is of most importance to begin with, as it relates only to the weather.
Well, I think, first of all, we're seeing a fair amount of moisture streaming into the southwestern United States, and why that's important is that some of that higher humidity air is going to get drawn into the central areas of the United States and eventually the Corn Belt here over the next week to 14 days. We've seen some badly needed rains fall in parts of the Four Corners region over the weekend and late last week, and some of that is going to stretch into some areas of Kansas here in the coming days, bringing those areas some rains. But at least here initially, for the next 5 or 6 days, that moisture is going to stay more towards those western areas. However, there's going to be high pressure over the southern plains, and the clockwise rotation around that high is going to draw that higher humidity air eventually into the Midwest and Corn Belt. So while I don't see over the next 4 to 5 days a lot of Corn Belt rains, a little bit in the western and southern areas, as we get into the latter half of the weekend and into early next week, I do see thunderstorm and shower activity becoming a little bit more widespread.
Are these the ring of fire, thunderstorm, and shower activity that we're used to during the summer months?
Definitely. And the thing is that it usually is the middle to the end of July when it really matures. So we're seeing signs of it kind of maybe a little bit early. Now, that's both good news and bad news, depending on where you are. But it does look like as we peer into that real critical first week of July, I do think that the rains that we're going to see in the Corn Belt and Midwest is going to be because of that ring of fire, as high pressure is going to be really settling into the southern plains.
Corn needs about 1 inch of rainfall a week in the month of June, particularly in the month of July. If you had to make a good guess, and let's only go through the middle of July, do you think that can be managed?
I do. I think this is going to be especially true, I think, in the central northern and northwest areas of the Corn Belt. If I was going to find an area where maybe the chances of rain are going to be less, and we might not meet that criteria you're talking about, it would be the eastern Corn Belt. That would maybe be Indiana, parts of Ohio. But for the central and western Corn Belt, I do think that ring of fire precipitation is going to play a real pivotal role at the end of June and into the first couple of weeks of July.
Thank you so much.
All righty.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Now let's turn our attention to the agricultural energies. Dave Chatterton is here from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign County, Illinois. Hi, Dave. Thanks for being with us. Let's jump right into this. Start with the geopolitical issues related to Ukraine, Russia, China, all those sorts of things, and how it's playing out at this point for you across the planet.
Yeah, Todd, thanks for having me. You know, volatility is, I think, the word of the day here, and that's not something, a symptom of just the energy market in general, but it's kind of commodity-wide here. But if we look specifically at what's going on in the energy complex, we've got, you know, tight supplies, we've got this ongoing geopolitical conflict, and that includes the Russia-Ukraine conflict, that includes, you know, the COVID issues with China, that includes central banks around the world fighting inflation and raising rates and doing different things with fiscal policy. And on top of that, of course, the worry about recession and what that will mean for demand. In terms of, you know, I think specifically in terms of Russia and Ukraine, we saw a pretty big dip in that Russian crude oil production. When the war got started, their production was off by more than 1 million barrels a day. They've made up a good portion of that, probably more than half of that right now. And their exports continue to flow into different parts of the world. So as their exports into the EU and to Europe have cut back, but we've seen their exports into Russia, into Asia and China start to pick up a little bit here, Todd. And in doing so, I think they maintain their revenue base going forward, but it's certainly a fluid situation with all the things that I just mentioned, and I think it's going to continue to be that way as we move forward here across the summer.
So this has pushed a reconfiguration of trading partners and trade flow across the planet. What does it mean here in the United States this fall, particularly for the energy needs that producers will have, diesel fuel, natural gas, propane, those kinds of things?
Yeah, Todd, I think the biggest message here is that we expect the stocks to continue to stay tight here. If we look at just the overall picture in the U.S. right now, crude oil stocks are about, we'll call it 12 to 14% below the five-year average. Gasoline in a little better shape, it's about 10 to 11% below, but diesel fuel remains in that 22, 24% below the five-year average range. And trying to improve that going forward is going to be tough. The political climate that we're in, you know, at the moment here is one where we can't increase U.S. production very quickly anyway. I'm not saying we can't do it or won't do it, but it will take time. In the meantime, our domestic demand remains good, but our export demand also, we're seeing the export of not only crude oil, but the refined products as well, and gasoline and diesel fuel. Those exports are near record levels. And so that's part of the political you know, angle here of the U.S. and other Western countries trying to provide a substitute, particularly to Europe, for those lost Russian supplies. In the meantime, we also continue to see OPEC come up short on their production quotas. So even though they're increasing their production quotas every month here, and by last month they actually increased their increase, if that's the way to say that, but they haven't been able to meet those production targets because of problems in some of their other countries. So the spare capacity that's trapped or inherent within Saudi Arabia and the UAE and some of their other big producers doesn't flow down the line. And the way that those quotas are allocated, they're not by volume or they're not weighted. They're by, you know, a specific country and split equally. And so OPEC is coming up short on their targets. And when this continues to feed into that supply narrative that I talked about, where I think supplies stay tied into the fall here, we've got a cash basis that has come off a little bit in the diesel fuel segment in the Midwest, but I think remains relatively firm. And I think those stocks stay tight and just not a lot of room without, you know, a pure economic downturn to see a lot of potential in the downside in terms of price, Todd.
On a related issue, agriculture commodities like corn will need nitrogen in the fall for the next year, a MAP and DAP as well. I'm wondering whether you've been thinking very much about what that looks like, especially as some of those prices have begun to fall pretty dramatically. Are there reasons for that, and do you think it can hold?
Yeah, it's a really quick, curious question about seeing these fertilizer prices come down. They've come down not only in the U.S., but also globally, particularly in Brazil. And there was a time that we were worried about South America and having enough inputs. And it seems like the prices have come down. There's an argument, I guess, two sides of that argument here in the U.S. One is that simply that producers are cutting back because of high input costs and aren't using as much fertilizer. Second would be that perhaps we didn't get as many corn acres out as what the USDA, you know, intentions had led us to believe. And there may be some truth in both of those arguments, but I don't find too many producers here in the Midwest who are cutting back on their application rates, particularly in light of where prices are at today. So I think at the end of the day, when we look at this in a global or holistic picture, it points to the situation where fertilizer demand was certainly challenging, but because of the profit margins that were on the table, we saw that the production did step up and get done in one way, shape, or form. We saw that, you know, suppliers were very aggressive in building inventories, importing supplies where they could, and building that base to feed what they thought would be the demand, and maybe overshot that just a little bit. Having said that, I mean, I don't think that means that you let your guard down here. I think we're still in a situation where, you know, supply side and production side issues and distribution and logistics are still all challenges as far as getting that product to the position it needs to be at the time it needs to be to make everything flow smoothly. So certainly, you know, I think you want to err on the side of looking at this downside and keeping your price feelers out there as far as they go forward into what would be this fall and next spring.
Yeah, so at this point in time, those that are in the Midwest are starting to refill their capacity, bringing in fertilizers for the fall. Does that appear to be going okay?
So far, it looks to be going pretty good. Yeah, I mean, I don't have the specific numbers on inventories and where we're at, but I think looking at the price scenario where we're at and the drops that we've seen, the ability of suppliers willing to come back and contract for fall supply, contract for even some spring, you know, needs next spring, and do so on a non, you know, a typical held type of a basis without the precursors that we saw at some points this spring, makes me feel a little bit better about where supplies are going to be. Now, what we'll have to pay for those supplies, we can debate a little bit here, but certainly the softness in the natural gas market here of late is leading a few people to feel better about it. When we run our numbers, Todd, on the correlation, you know, let's say it's particularly for nitrogen versus, you know, versus what we see very much a better correlation to a corn price than we see to the input side on the natural gas side.
So I have a question about that as we close out our time together. Are you fearful that the drop in nitrogen price will reflect a drop in the corn price going into the fall, given a normal growing this season the rest of the way out?
I think you make that argument, but I guess it's not my favorite viewpoint. I think that the fertilizer tends to be the secondary or the following fact, you know, not the leading amount of this forecast. I think it tends to follow the corn price as opposed to lead the corn price. So it'll be interesting to see how things turn out. And maybe these fertilizer producers know something that we don't know or that we don't see particularly right now. But, you know, the global situation or supply and demand situation on corn and feed grains in general continues to look very tight in our viewpoint. And certainly there could be some downside here with a good crop in the U.S. and if the weather turns out to be more favorable, et cetera. But, you know, to go before we land that crop. So I think corn is the leading indicator here and we'll be the one to follow.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
Dave Chatterton is for Strategic Farm Marketing. Joined us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand at willag.org, willag.org, or look us up in your favorite podcast applications. Places like Stitcher and Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Amazon Music, and even NPR One. You can always just ask Alexa or Google if you've got those in your house to play the Closing Market Report. Our theme music for the day was written and performed by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.